You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
You're listening to What Won't We Say?
We believe that we are better in community and that all people want to be known.
That true authenticity can only be reached through honesty and vulnerability.
This is a judgment-free zone and a shame-free space where individuality is encouraged and celebrated.
We are your hosts, Sonia Mastic
and Jen Kinney.
All right, we're welcoming to the show tonight Miss Julie Funky.
Hello.
And Julie is an accountant, consultant, and trainer. So accountant makes sense. Consultant makes sense. Do you train people on how to do their taxes, how to run their business? What?
I train progressive nonprofits how to read financial statements, how to plan their budgets, how to plan for reserves, think about their finances sustainability or in a sustainable way. Mm-hmm. And so I travel around the country and do trainings, and it's a lot of fun.
Do you make them do jumping jacks while they're learning these things?
You know, sometimes I do make them listen to Donna Summer, She Works Hard for the Money, and we dance. And my business partner and I hand out, my company is named Fun with Financials, and we hand out temporary tattoos when people answer questions. And you would not believe like how people will
amazing.
Lose it to get a temporary tattoo from us. We bring it. We bring it.
We're all five on the inside. That's why. Like,
exactly.
It's really the truth. Like, yeah. I think it's why men never outgrow the bin at like Ace Hardware with like free or discounted stuff.
Absolutely.
Like my husband will peruse. He's like, I think I need this giant crescent wrench for $12, but it's 80% off. I'm like, oh my God.
Must bring it home.
Yes. So it must be.
Must bring it home.
It must be that we're all like the little kid.
You know? And in trainings, people will put them on their hands, put them on their arms. I've had people try to make a sleeve out of their tattoos. They're fun with financial at tattoos. So, you know, we bring it. We definitely bring the fun to our financial trainings.
When you created them, did you have any idea how much people would freak out over it?
We did not, actually. And it was funny. My business partner, she is the one that came up with the idea and ordered them. And she bought them in a lot of 10,000.
You're like,
so we're like, somebody better like these. So we're still handing out the same lot, but people,
19 years later.
Yeah, but people are like lose their minds for them. So,
do you want to give a shout out to your partner since you keep saying she?
Yeah, my partner Carol Cantwell in San Francisco. She is my big sis from another mother and my business partner. So she'll listen to this. So hi, Carol.
That's awesome. Carol.
So let me ask you a question, because I've met people who work in finance, but I've never heard of something as specialized as what you're doing. So what influenced you, or how did you come into this? Tell us a little of your backstory.
Sure. So I kind of came into the accounting world in a very traditional way. I got my master's and did my CPA. I worked at a big four accounting firm right out of school. So did sort of the traditional accounting path, but I never really felt like I fit in. Everyone was very nice and I had great experiences working, but it just wasn't a place that, I mean, I'd be working, doing audits and doing kind of like traditional accounting work. And I'd be like volunteering for Planned Parenthood on the weekends, canvassing for Sierra Club on the weekends, you know, and it wasn't something that my coworkers were doing. They were, you know, supporting different candidates or getting married and having babies, which is totally fine. But
so
that was
dumb.
Just that was just there. That's just where they were going. And that's not where I was in my life at that point. And so I always knew I wanted to get into nonprofit. And specifically, I really wanted to work in the progressive movement because that is where my politics lie. And I just felt like I could use my really dorky strengths in accounting and finance and compliance, because I really like that work, and help those groups. And they need a lot of help with that work. So I feel lucky that I kind of, you know, fell into it in a little bit of a way with my business partner. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Well, we're gonna delve a little more into the progressives and progressive world, because I think, like, I know for myself, I consider myself also to be a progressive. But I did want to backtrack just a bit, and since it is one of the first podcasts for us of the new year, that we talk a little bit about New Year's resolutions. Do you make them?
I don't anymore.
Anymore is the caveat.
I used to. Yes. I used to be one of those, you know, big time start Weight Watchers on January 1. I've always worked out. Like, that was never a place, but it was always sort of like the food piece that I would. So this has really been one of the past few years that I have not made any resolutions. I'll make sort of goals for the year from my business and, you know, things that, like, one of the things is I want to try to partake in more sustainable clothing and fashion and those types of things. So I'm trying to be things that I kind of want to be more cognizant of and be more thoughtful around, but nothing that's like I need to drastically change, because it's just not going to it doesn't happen.
You know your reality and the reality of 99% of the population.
Right. I want to be realistic and, you know, work on some things that are actually more interesting to me than, you know, some of the sort of typical New Year's resolution. So
Jen?
Yeah, so this year my resolution was to eat donuts as often as possible.
You've succeeded.
I'm only partly joking, because every year I've done the whole 30 thing. Mm-hmm. I've done paleo. You know, I've been uber conscious of clean eating. And I feel like I got to a point a couple of years ago where it was doing the opposite for me and wearing me down quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And I had all of this just negative stuff that I had to sort through. And so what I tried to do, instead of just binging and being crazy all November and December, I tried to embrace a more open, healthy, positive perspective about food and just enjoy what I was going to eat, not feel guilt and shame over it, you know, like eat healthy. Mm-hmm. Like today I went to get burgers with my kids, which I love. I absolutely love. And I'm like, you know what? I kind of feel like a salad, oddly. So I'm going to make a salad and eat it because I want to eat it. But then I really want a donut. So I'm going to eat a donut and just enjoy that and enjoy food. And so for some reason this year, too, I decided I'm not doing resolutions. Instead, I have the same idea about goals. And my husband and I have been talking through this list of questions and, you know, just trying to think, like, what fulfilled us and filled us last year? And how do we carry that into the new year? And the thing that we kind of touched on was people, relationships, focusing on those things, and just self-care. Yeah. So if that means I'm going to eat a maple bacon donut for my self-care,
donut,
I'm totally going to do it. Yeah.
How
about you?
I do want to say one thing, and then I will launch into my New Year's thing. But you said paleo, and I love the argument for paleo. And you guys can write in until the cows come home. Get it? Cows, paleo. One thing I hate is that people tout, like, first off, anything that's restrictive in nature other than restricting sugar and fat and things like that, you're going to fail and your body's going to feel horrible. Like restricting essential things, you know, like you can't even restrict too much fat. You can't restrict, you know, so I'm just not a proponent for any of them. But the paleo argument I love is that, like, well, you eat the way that cavemen ate because there was no blood, there was no heart disease then. Okay, first off, you don't know if there was heart disease then.
Right.
And secondly, they died when they were like 20.
Exactly. Right. You know, so I was going to say, with a lifespan of 28 years old, right?
So like, yeah, we certainly live longer. And living longer means that your body dies as you go. It breaks down. Mm-hmm. You're going to get heart disease, even if you lived a fantastic life, probably at some point, because your whole body, you're an organism, you're just breaking down.
Well, now I'm depressed. Thanks.
But it's the paleo thing, though. It's a thing of, like, people saying, you know, that's because the idea is, like, that's the way that the cavemen ate. Like, well, you know, when you're chasing down a woolly mammoth for lunch, we'll talk.
Yeah.
But if you're chasing down Burger King, really, that's not, you know.
That's what I always say about paleo, too. It's just like, I mean, I think that there were some sort of grains at that time, right? I mean, those have been on Earth for a long time. Yeah. But was
hence
a Big
ancient
Mac.
Grains.
Right. Hence ancient grains, but, like, you know, was a Big Mac around? Like, I'm not slamming McDonald's, right? I'm not slamming any kind of food, but it's just like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
I want a Big Mac now.
But I get the omission of processed foods. Like, yeah, right. you know, you just go back to actually whole foods, eating well, things like that. Yeah, and I also subscribe to that. Anyway, the paleo thing makes me laugh, you know? And
yeah,
just,
me too.
Bulletproof coffee. They're like, no, if you have a stick of butter every morning and just coffee, you'll lose weight. Your heart will explode, but you'll totally lose weight dead. Like, what?
Well, let me ask you this too. Like, going into a new year with resolutions, aren't resolutions often, you know, sort of like a response to intense shame and failing?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so why go through this back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and not just embrace maybe more whole, intelligent living?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You both hit the nail on the head. And so my resolution is the same, much more self-care. Mm-hmm. And self-care will then involve exercising. I don't exercise to look a specific way. I'd like to. I'm not going to lie. It isn't like I'm like, I put in 15 hours at the gym so I can be slightly overweight. that isn't the point. The point is like I haven't been able to work out for the last few weeks being sick. And mm-hmm. I was able to hit the gym really hard yesterday. And I felt, you know, I was telling Jen, we met yesterday. I'm like, I just feel like a different person. I feel I have mental clarity. Mm-hmm. I feel more energized. I sleep better. It just works for me. It may not work for everybody. I'm fine with that. That's not at all what I'm saying. But so mine is self-care, and I did make some sort of not resolutions, but definitely some commitments of, you know, I wanted to read 2 books a month and things like that. So I just wanted to like get better all the way around, be a better thinker, better, you know, live my life a little better. So.
Yeah. Yeah, completely.
So we touched a little bit on your why, you know, of why you went into working with nonprofits and more progressive community, because that is where your politics lie. Mm-hmm. But Jen and I were sort of into a discussion yesterday talking about everything has two sides. Everything has a good and potentially a bad side to it. Mm-hmm. And I've lived in Ferndale for 18 years. And if anybody spent 5 seconds on the Ferndale Forum or the Fabulous Ferndale Forum, you will see how having an opinion is a bad idea. and you will be chased out of town with torches if you have a really differing idea than the populace. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of something that I was curious about, like your thoughts on that, of how extreme we're getting in our society, even with a very well-intended moniker like progressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think, I mean, with the divisiveness that is in our politics right now, I think that people are kind of clinging to one side or the other in a lot of ways. And sort of the moderate piece is not really, I mean, I think those people are still there, but I think that there's a sort of a lostness that's happening with those groups of people that might feel some connections on either side, right? So I do see, you know, in the progressive movement, some of that going on as far as not accepting anything that's not from sort of these strict sort of ideals of the progressive movement. And something else that I see, you know, working with a lot of these groups in the way that I do, being sort of like the finance compliance side, I see kind of a lot of the nitty gritty details, right? And get into a lot of the different, sometimes tough stuff with groups, is also just interestingly a lot of acceptance of sort of really bad behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's embezzling money, whether it's some egregious HR thing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of stuff that you're like, ugh, this would not fly in a corporate world. And so sometimes it's something my business partner and I talk a lot about, and something that we talk to our clients that, you know, it's okay to fire someone that hasn't shown up for work for 2 weeks straight. Mm-hmm. It's okay to fire someone that has sent an inappropriate photo to another client to kind of get that all. And these are sometimes these are kind of the conversations we have to have in our movement, is that there's an acceptance sometimes of just, so it's interesting that there's like this gripping of ideals that, and then sometimes it doesn't play out in that way, even in these organizations. So that's something that, you know, we again see working in like the spaces that we do, and something we'd really try to call out and identify. And in a way, us coming in as consultants can be helpful for groups, because sometimes when you're in the middle of something and it's a friend of yours or someone that you've worked with over the years and organized with at different organizations, you don't want to push them out of an organization or, you know, do something. So sometimes it can be helpful for us to be sort of that third party or that voice, but it can take some time for sure. I see it with a lot of groups and a lot of my clients.
Yeah. So what you're saying is human beings can be hypocritical and make mistakes.
Absolutely.
And it's that way across the board,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I feel like it's so important to deal with integrity and mm-hmm. issues of integrity, specifically if you're in a movement that is aimed toward shifting culture or doing something to improve a community. Mm-hmm. You will fall if you lack integrity. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to go in and speak to that, I think, is above and beyond just a financial service,
sure.
right?
Yeah. I really feel like my work, I mean, like I said, I was an accountant, CPA. I love numbers, right? But I've really turned into more of a consult. You know, I'm really sometimes an accounting therapist. Sometimes I call myself sure. that, where, you know, I've had people crying. I've had people, because of course, even finances on their own can be extremely stressful for people. And, you know, I feel privilege that I can help people through some of those things, because almost all these things we can work through. That's my work. It was kind of a big transition for me coming from I was a finance director at a nonprofit. It was a progressive nonprofit before this. So I was in charge of all the finance and HR of the organization. And then coming into this, and I remember the first time someone was crying in front of me and I was like, ugh. Like, what? You know, not that I don't know how to handle someone crying, but I was just like, I don't know this person. What do I do? Does she need a hug? Right? I didn't really know how to respond.
Like, you grab a broom and pat her on the back.
Let's look at the QuickBooks. Let's look at your QuickBook, right? Like, you know, so it was kind of an interesting turn. And I'm still sort of learning and getting. And that's something I really learned from working with my business partner, because she has been doing this work a lot longer than me. And from the consulting side, I think this is her 13th or 14th year. So I learn a lot from her on how to sort of like continually deal with the human aspect of all of this, which mm-hmm. is clearly going to be there.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much emotion tied to money that, I mean, marriages end over money. And, mm-hmm. and so
it's the number one reason for divorce, actually.
You know, interesting, the number one reason for a few of my friends that are therapists, the number one reason that couples are in for couples counseling. Mm. What's your guess? It's not money.
Communication?
Close.
Of course, communication.
I know.
What's your guess, Jen?
I was going to say money.
Facebook.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, guys, this is good.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So it's
Facebook drama? Like,
well, it's not even that. So it's basically people finding ex-boyfriends or girlfriends and having emotional affairs, because they're suddenly going back to when they were limitless, when they were immortal, when they were in high school. Ooh. And they go back to that feeling of being euphoric and that new thing. And then it starts stealing communication from the relationship, which is why I said you were kind of close.
Yeah.
But yeah, wow. Some of my therapist friends say that's the number one reason is social media.
Wow.
It drives quite a rift. And that's why you see a lot of couples that have couple accounts. And and people always joke about it. They're like, get your own account, you know, like, oh, make jokes about it. But it's like,
yeah, I actually used to think that was so weird. But now it's putting a
different light on that. You're like, no,
that
I'm married.
I know. I've only been married a little over a year. So I'm keeping my own Facebook account.
Right. Yeah. But I can see.
But I understand. Yeah. Like, I can see that if it's.
If you're struggling, yeah.
Right.
It's okay to struggle. It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay to struggle and to come up with a response. Yes, you have to check my own Facebook couple judgment on that.
Yeah,
I definitely.
I do know some couples that have one.
Yeah.
And I know one or the other had some sort of issues. Yeah. And they're lovely people. Mm-hmm. But I love that they're saying, you know what? I keep messing this up, and I want to be accountable to you and to this marriage.
This,
so let's keep it all above board. Like. Mm-hmm. I think it's great.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah, I think it's great. I did want to backtrack a little bit, though, when you were saying that in these scenarios, they don't hold their own employees and staff accountable. They let a lot of stuff slide.
Yeah.
Do you think that is because of we sort of seem to have this culture of the end justifies the means. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're the good guy. It doesn't matter how, like, look at, like, DC Comics and, you know, Batman and things like that. Like, you can murder 18,000 people while you're trying to catch the villain because the end justifies the means.
Yeah.
It's fake, but it's an interesting message.
Yeah. That's interesting. You know, I just thought it was, you know, just around sort of the community being relatively small. You know, overall, I mean, I work with a lot of people I've known in different capacities over the years, right? And a lot of really great people. But I was kind of thinking of it from that perspective. I do think there might be a shift happening, sort of, as especially with some of the stuff that's happening around sort of Me Too and the Time's Up and all those different movements now, that it's not, especially some of the like sexual harassment and things like that aren't as swept under the rug, you know, but that's taken some time, even in the progressive movement, which you would expect mm-hmm. it to be the opposite. But that's also interesting, too. I never really thought of it like that. I just thought of it as like the community being so small. It's like, and maybe mm-hmm. that is part of it. It's like we have to stick together because this is the group that's fighting for justice.
And
right?
I'll just say one, you know, and mm-hmm. the case in point is, you know, Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. It's you know, it's suppression of, you know, we're the good guys mm-hmm. and this probably isn't happening everywhere. So let's just protect our own. Let's just move them to, you know, they're talking about, I was on NPR, they're talking about Jesuits and they were moving them, you know, from place to place that mm-hmm. were having, you know, sex abuse allegations and things,
right.
but not rehabbing, and said, you know, like, oh yeah, we have people following up with them daily and everything, and they never had been followed up with ever. Mm-hmm. And so I think it is sort of this syndrome, and I think that's, I made the joke about Ferndale Forum, which is, to be clear, full of lovely people, but mm-hmm. like every once in a while, man, it just goes sideways.
It
but
blows up.
I think that the theory is that the good guy gets a little more leeway than the mm-hmm. bad guy, and I'm doing the air quotes, is so. I think it's an interesting case in point of, like, if you're the bad, if you're on the bad guy side, you have to be wiped off the face of the earth. And if you're on the good guy side, well, he does a lot of good. And
right.
we caught him on audio saying this, that, or the other.
Right. Or there's some other HR, or there was embezzling of money. That's always my favorite one. There's embezzling of money and people are just like, well, he doesn't make that much money. And I'm just like, what? Like, that is completely, like, this is unacceptable, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, this is just, anyway, yeah.
What do you think, Jenna? Do you think it's that is the case?
Yeah, and just to talk about, so within the context, though, of the work that I do, one of the things that I really set out to do is bring people together to have conversations, because I believe that within the context of safe dialogue, mm-hmm. people can begin to, you know, learn, grow, hear each other more. Mm-hmm. And that's a really messy process.
Sure.
So for me, and I've done this for a long time and in other scenarios as well, I used to host dinner parties on political topics that were really hot topics. And the entire goal was to actually bring people together with differing opinions. My goal has always been to say, we share more in common than mm-hmm. we realize. And if we can get down to that and we can start to sort of dissect that, discuss that, and then put down our defenses and listen to one another, we might actually learn we agree more. We might change minds. We might soften hearts, like all of these things. One of my biggest challenges and frustrations, though, is this very thing that we're talking about. And it's interesting because I was telling you guys about this before we started the show, but somebody sent me some clip of a guy on a talk show talking to somebody who wrote a book. I know this is really horrible lead-in because I don't know who these people
so
are.
So much detail.
Right, I know. But so this guy was a professor and he was talking about something called the call-out culture, which I have not heard of. And I mean, I'll admit, I'm 41. I didn't grow up in social media. Mm-hmm. But what he was saying is that because you have this generation of people who have grown up in social media doing things for reactions. So they do things at, you know, the high of likes or follows or loves on Instagram or whatever platform they're on. And so we've developed this tendency toward calling people out instead of actually pulling them aside with the intention of, you know, building bridges mm-hmm. and really having conversations and creating change. Mm-hmm. And so one of my biggest frustrations actually in the work that I do are people that I've coined as like white liberal woke folk who think that they're woke.
I hate that word, by the way.
I know. And that's why I use it a little bit. Because, you know, like people who consider themselves beyond just ally in their understanding of things, but then what they do is they get stuck and they get arrogant. And they're really difficult because they add enough to the conversation that they shame people and they make them feel bad. Mm-hmm. And then they crawl further into their hole and stop engaging. And I'm sitting there going, no. We need to engage. I don't want my friend over here to have to engage this person, but I feel like it's my role to do that. And mm-hmm. so it's really frustrating to me because I see this thing going on where instead of learning and growing mm-hmm. and conversing. Instead, we're digging deeper and going farther into these ideological caves. Mm-hmm. But what's benefiting?
Right.
And that's my thing. It's like you might be 100% correct in your ideology, but if you're not doing anything other than self-protecting and you're not doing anything to move the conversation forward and, you know, like what's the point?
Right.
And you and I, Julie, spoke a little bit about even you trying to do some sort of conversation about politics with even family members mm-hmm. and the in trying to sort of, you know, reconcile an approach that is I thought that was very very good and a great approach that you were just describing, like trying to have the hard conversations.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, my sister and I are both very progressive and my parents are both Republicans. Right. So they have been lifelong Republicans. They're lovely, wonderful people. They're tolerant people. They're loving people and they're great. But we do have that sort of, you know, and so sometimes when we talk about it, it does get heated, right? And we had an instance of it getting a little bit heated. And it's okay. I mean, everyone's okay with it because I've definitely seen it where it's actually torn families apart. And I mean, I even remember after, you know, Trump was elected, and I know I was personally devastated when Trump was elected. Mm-hmm. But I remember seeing, you know, things in progressive Facebook groups and different things where they were like, cut out your family that voted for Trump.
That's
crazy. Cut out your family. Cut out your friends. And I'm just like, that is insane. Mm-hmm. I can't. That's the answer? Mm-hmm. And like you said, so I really appreciate you doing what you're doing and sort of making those, building those bridges, because I truly believe that we all have so much more in common than we don't. And even when we don't agree on something, we can still clearly coexist, right? We all have the same, we all love family and friends and good food and mm-hmm. drink. You know, there's a lot, and that spans the globe, right? That is right. Something that all people can kind of get behind, the humanity of just being human, right? And you're right. I mean, we dig into these different corners. When I saw that in the progressive, I mean, it was devastating to me mm-hmm. to see that in so many different spaces. And I ended up talking to a couple of my friends about it, and they were just like, it's insane. But nobody was out there saying it was insane at that time, because mm-hmm. and I know I wasn't either, because I was just like shocked, right, from everything that was going yeah. on. But so I was just as guilty as not saying anything, but it was just like that was the narrative, and a lot of the different Facebook groups, a lot of social media was just like, cut off your family, don't go to Thanksgiving, all this stuff. And I'm just like, that's insane to me. That is insane.
Well, such hard lines were drawn. And one of, like, I lived abroad right before the election. And I came back, I believe, 3 weeks before the election. And I noticed nobody would talk. And I would go on because I was so curious, like, how are conservatives voting for Donald Trump? And because he's not a conservative.
I saw you posting that, too. I was like, woo.
You know, and like, I mean, absolutely not a conservative, but I'd lived outside of the country for a good year, and I was largely removed from a lot of the stuff that was going on here. And I remember being very concerned about the silence from people. And so that's the thing is, that very shaming and silencing and preventing conversations is precisely what got him elected. Mm-hmm. And so we can't pretend that's not impacting things. Mm-hmm. So,
absolutely.
You know, it's not this, you're good, you're bad.
Right.
I mean, some people listening may think that that is the case.
Sure.
And their thought process is, I would argue, reductive in that way. Mm-hmm. And I understand it. And yet, I don't think it's going to solve anything.
It's not going to get us anywhere.
No.
You know, it's just going to dig it in deeper and we'll just be more divisive. And
well, because right. yeah. everyone enjoys, apparently in some way, and I'm including myself, the us versus them, is that you have this thing of like, I've figured it out, and but what I figured it out means for me and probably a lot of other people is I don't have to be vulnerable to you. Mm-hmm. I've shored up my fortress.
Right.
I put up my walls. I know what's going on, man. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm the old hippie saying, like, I know what's going on, man. Like I've figured it out for mm-hmm. myself. It may not be right for you, but I figured it out for myself. And I will fire over this moat artillery if I have to,
right,
to prove that you're wrong and I'm right, and
right,
to protect my safety. Mm-hmm. So I think it is an act of vulnerability to just even for you to come on a podcast like this and talk about this. Mm-hmm. But vulnerability is when we start realizing, oh, there's only one collective we.
Right.
We're all attached. We all are this one body that has to care for each other.
Yeah.
And I don't want to care some nights for my relative that tells me how the reason he voted for Trump is he's going to keep us safe. I know that that is a ridiculous argument, and it makes me want to punch him in the eye. Mm-hmm. But he's not a bad guy, you know.
Right.
Like I don't like it. So it. But the other thing too is I think that people have a difficult time reconciling that we're giant contradictions, and I think that's scary for people. It definitely like messes me up where I'm just like, you know, I should like this, this, and this. I just don't. Like, I like what I like, and you like what you like.
Exactly.
And Jen likes what she likes. So,
right.
I mean, what do you think about that?
I mean, I think that's interesting, too. I mean, I think that the vulnerability part I can really see, and it's sort of tied to the contradictions piece, because yeah, people do, I think, identify, especially now, as being sort of on one side or the other, and you know, making those connections and reaching out. I mean, it was interesting after Trump was elected. You know, of course, everybody was posting on social media. Right, everyone was blowing stuff up. You know, it was just everybody was freaking out. Right,
yeah.
When I shouldn't say blowing stuff. I should say like blowing up
yeah,
social
right,
media.
Right,
right.
Let's be clear.
Like, let's be clear. Like in a virtual,
we're not
way,
burning Nikes.
We're not
here,
like burning anything. Down things.
Yeah. I was eating a lot of Tums, though. I'm not lying either.
Oh, I know.
I stayed up all night and was eating an acid.
I drank a bottle of wine. I drank a bottle of celebratory champagne that I bought. I just, like, drank the whole thing.
How did this happen?
So, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was rough, like, for sure. I was crying. Like, it was, yeah. So I'm not going to say, but, I mean, I made the decision to sort of step back from active posting, you know, mm-hmm. on social media just to sort of listen. To all sides.
Oh my God, like, I love you. You're coming
decided,
on our show every week.
I just, I made that. And I mean, for me specifically, I was like, I really want to listen to where people of color are in this country now. Because I felt like I was, did not realize how bad it was. I think when, you know, after he was elected and then there was like the Muslim ban and all these things happened, I was like, you are completely in your like white lady mode and you need to step back and listen to your friends of color, writers of color, to really start thinking about what these different groups are saying and where their experiences are. And then I also was listening to somewhat the other side. I mean, I know that there's some craziness out there, and I know I'm mm-hmm. speaking from progressive view, right?
But, yeah, but not everyone that votes for somebody you don't like is crazy.
Crazy,
yeah,
right. I mean, but you look, there's some stuff out there that can be crazy to me, mm-hmm. but it's just like, but trying to, you know, listen out there and even, you know, having conversations with other family members, too, around the same issue, right? Mm-hmm. I had a conversation recently with a family member that thought I was anti-veterans being progressive, and I mm-hmm. was like, what? Like, are you kidding me? Right? So we had this whole conversation about it, and he was really kind, and it really was eye-opening to him from the perspective of sort of like where his kind of view is mm-hmm. versus what sort of reality is for me as a progressive. And of course, I'm not speaking for all progressives, but
of course
it was something I was like, I can't believe that that's what you think. So again, having those conversations. But yeah, after he was elected, I really was like, I want to just step back and I just need to listen for a while. And I'm a talker. I'm an extrovert. I love talking. So it was extra hard, right? Because I wanted to do that. I had that. I wanted to post. I wanted, but I was like, no, step back.
That's wonderful wisdom, too. And that's the thing is like you had this great wisdom about you to not buy into Julie and I work in the same office space, and we had talked at one point about how we have this culture where everybody feels they have to be the expert mm-hmm. and they have to have all the answers or they will be shamed to not have the answers. Mm-hmm. And you didn't buy into that. You were like, you know what?
No, I don't have, there's a lot of answers I don't have
yeah.
for sure. And I want to learn, right? And I want to help build that community, build those bridges.
But
right?
I think the intention's good in a lot of those situations, though, where like your passion takes over
mm-hmm.
and you feel
sure.
strong, and you're just like,
yes.
I want to defend because you know,
absolutely.
You have to be clear on the fact that Trump is not a Republican nor a Democrat. He's a crazy person in office. But you know what I mean? Because there's many Republican. I'm not a Republican. I'm definitely more progressive. But there's Republicans that you know that were in a sense, benign, comparatively speaking. Like, nobody's benign in that office, of course.
Right.
But I remember standing in my kitchen not too long after and saying to my husband, which are words that would never be uttered out of my mouth ever, God, I miss Bush. I miss him so much. He's just like throwing up on, you know, at Japanese dinners and bashing his head on a table, eating a cracker or a pretzel or whatever it was.
You're like, come back from doing your paintings. Come back.
I mean,
but
know.
He was pretty crazy too. I mean, that was like one of the reasons I got into politics.
Yeah.
Like,
he did nutty stuff. Absolutely.
He did.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah.
Destructive,
but I agree.
Nutty stuff.
But it's like, yeah. It's now we have a different bar, right? Yeah. That is. Makes things different things relative.
We've
right?
thrown the bar into the ocean.
Absolutely.
There's no bar.
There's
it's
no
just
bar.
It's just a muck
it's
of
a
crap.
Completely free for all hot mess. Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah it is absolute insanity. But yeah, so that is really interesting. And I mean, what is your stance on it, Jen? Talking about the vulnerability piece and kind of going back to that.
She's getting ready.
Vulnerability. No, I'm like, I'm in the ocean with
you're somewhere
and
else
like,
now.
Imagining Putin shirtless. Sorry. Like, yeah.
So
squirrel.
Am I. I'm horribly sorry.
I know, right?
Yeah, I'm really sorry.
You guys took me somewhere
you know
else
what?
Here.
Let's just go down that road.
Let's have this meaningful conversation about vulnerability.
No, let's
here.
Psychologically
then,
analyze why you're picturing Putin shirtless.
On a horse, maybe? Riding
oh,
a horse?
Yeah. Yeah, there's
remember
that
Saturday
calendar.
Live sketch? Oh,
there was
yeah,
that
right.
calendar. There was like a legit calendar.
Oh, Putin.
I'll never forget it.
So what were you saying about vulnerability and the importance of it? Oh, you had said something the other day that was really good. How people crave, like, it's like a safety.
Yeah.
That they're looking
certainty,
for.
Certainty, yeah.
Yeah. So when you said the other day that people crave certainty, and that sort of creates this bubble, in a sense, and mm-hmm. it really, what it ends up doing is it isolates and alienates. And I think that's kind of the core of what we're speaking to right now, is as we pursue certain things that we see as safe or good or ideal or right, what we end up doing sometimes is alienating ourselves or isolating. And then how does that impact culture on a whole? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what I'm interested in, is figuring out what is closing us off to one another and how can we open those things back up? So vulnerability is a huge key in that. But you don't just get vulnerable. Like people can't expect vulnerability from others, right?
Mm-mm,
because,
no.
You know, it's not something that can just be given. And yet at the same time, I wonder if it's one of those things that for each individual, like for myself, am I living a better life when I am vulnerable?
I think the answer is yes, and I think part of it too is that when you start isolating, that you know, there's hundreds of thousands of studies on how isolation makes you depressed, it makes you less happy, less fulfilled, and so it is like an actual real isolation. It's not just metaphoric. Your walls are getting smaller, your ideologies are getting smaller. The idea is that once you put up that wall, nothing's going out or in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's interesting that you say that, because they say that as we grow more connected through social media platforms, we actually have greater sense of loneliness.
Correct.
And isolation. And mm-hmm. so I wonder if an element that hasn't been really brought into that conversation is, in fact, the way social media tends to allow us to reside in our camps.
Yes.
And in our comforts. And it tailor makes our feeds based on what we like and, you know, what they know of
yeah.
us.
It's a big Absolutely. Part of it, but also it's the part of you, man, you show an ounce of vulnerability on social media.
Oh.
You better armor up. Because, I mean, it is where ugly people go to be mean to people. The proof is in the pudding, so to speak, is that if you're in a space where you're not only not allowed to be vulnerable, but you have to be defensive, that doesn't foster community.
Absolutely not, yeah. And even in social media, I think, can be a hard place to really be vulnerable in general, right?
Period,
I mean,
yeah.
It's just how it can get shared so quickly. Mm. You know, there's just... I also did not grow up in social media time. You know, I'll be 40 this year, and I'm so grateful, to be honest. Like, I mean, when you think of all how quickly stuff moves now, you know, it's just, It can be pretty scary.
And it's a joke that all the dumb stuff I did, you know, wasn't put on social media because it didn't exist. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Thank goodness.
Thankfully.
Yes. Ooh. I mean, my God, right?
Like, yeah. It's
like... We're all just thinking back in horror and cringing it. You know,
absolutely.
Bad hair, bad clothes, dumb decisions.
Bad decisions.
And I heard like someone say like, oh, kids today are so much worse than they were when we were kids. No, we just didn't have social media. I remember being 22 and being that same jerk.
Right.
I was literally that idiot.
Exactly. You know? Like, I know. You see it. I know. You can totally see it. The same kid.
Same narcissist, making the same dumb decisions. Everything was about me. You know, I said dumb things. I thought dumb things. I was insensitive. I was that, you know, like.
Of course. Yeah, we all have been, right, at different
times.
Speak
for yourselves.
Yeah, you were an angel, I know.
Right.
But it is, like, very interesting because you seem to work your philosophy that you do of your life. If you put together the fact that you leaned back and really was paying attention to listen. That's a great part about your job.
Yeah.
And to maintain that integrity in your job and really, as much as you possibly can, insist that upon the people you work for.
Right. Absolutely.
Is very telling of who you are.
Yeah. That's been really invaluable in the work, for sure. And also, I mean, a lot of times when you're thinking of, when I come into, you know, a small social justice organization, right, where it's a bunch of organizers, sometimes it's a lot of people of color, and I'm coming in there, right? And sometimes there can be sort of like this weird trust, like, mm-hmm. who's this weird finance lady? You know, IRS, auditors, I don't want to think about any of this stuff, right? So I think having that ability to kind of stand back and listen and sort of give people the space to sort of share, and even some of the goofy fun stuff we do helps set a tone, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, in any case, I feel like if we walked into a place and it feels like we are just coming in new, you know, people don't know who we are, bringing that element to it helps kind of break down those barriers that people are automatically like, I don't want you to see my budget because it's really messy, or, you know, this and that, right? Or we don't know what we're doing. We don't know.
It's the equivalent of going through their underwear drawer.
Exactly. It is exactly going through their financial QuickBooks underwear drawer, for sure. And so that has helped, I think, set a tone. And then sort of to your points around just sort of social media, one other thing I've really noticed in the work that's been really helpful is doing things in person. I mean, that's why we travel a lot, which can be, you know, a lot of work, but we really work with our clients when we're, you know, getting together a group. That's almost always a part of the work that we do is an in-person training, because you cannot beat that. I can do webinars all day. I can talk on the phone. And some of them do land like that, and that's totally fine. I know it's expensive and, you know, obviously sometimes budgets, so you got to watch budgets and all that good stuff. But having those in-person meetings to me are priceless, and sort of connecting with people and really being able to reach out and help them in the work.
And I think you're reminding people of the human element that's necessary, because I have a lot of, the majority of my friends would rather you text than call.
Right.
And those are the ones I make sure I call. Mm-hmm. I just like purposely freak them out throughout the day.
Yeah.
But I'm not I'm a text if you have to answer a question or two. Otherwise we're talking. Cause I want to know when you say you're okay, that you're really okay. Mm-hmm. I want to hear the inflection, the tone in your voice. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to make you laugh. I want to be able to. So I love that you keep instilling this important and almost old world character to what you do, and I think it's going to keep you guys trustworthy and in business for a long time.
Thanks. We hope so. We love it.
Are you guys currently accepting more clients?
We are accepting clients. You know, we're pretty booked up, but we do have some room later this year for some additional clients. So you can check us out. We have a new website that I need to figure out how to use. That's one of my goals for the first quarter. Funwithfinancials.net and we're on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn as well. So you can check us out. And be sure to sign up for our email list, because we will be doing more webinars. And I know I said that, but we do realize that some folks, that is a way to connect and get some basic information out to folks. So we'll be doing some more webinars, more blog posts this year, and so have some more content out. So please check us out online.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This has been fun.
Thank you for listening to What Won't We Say?